Okay, so imagine, you know, let your mind travel a little bit and imagine how it might feel. What's the worst kind of feelings that might show up for you? But equally, what are the best?
Hello, everybody, and welcome back to this week's Art Juice. This is honest, generous, and humorous conversations that will feed your creative soul and get you thinking with me, Alice Sheridan. And this week, I am joined by a guest who you may not have heard of. Her name is Jo McCarthy, and she runs a very special... Well, I'll let her tell you about it in a minute, but... This was one of those moments, and I've been talking with people on the podcast about who we have as guests, and we get approached by a lot of people. And my whole ethos about how we show up online is that it needs to connect with people in a completely genuine way. And when I saw Jo's stuff on Instagram, went over to her website, read her wording, which, by the way, she doesn't think is very good, I rather love it. I immediately thought this would be a fantastic person to come and talk to you all. So very, very warm welcome, Jo. Thank you for being here.
Goodness me. Thank you, Alice. We're never happy with our own work, are we?
We never are.
Thank you very much for asking me onto the podcast. I'm looking forward to our chat.
So where are you actually joining from?
So I am in North Wales, which today could not be gloomier, but is often very beautiful. We live on the coast in Cricia, and we've lived here for about 4 years.
Okay. And I just want to read this little piece from your website. You're talking about the most critical growth happens underneath the surface. A business rooted in sustainable practices, led by strong values, a concern for its impact on others, and driven by a desire to offer something meaningful will stand tall. It will grow. It just takes time and energy to do the work. That was one of those things that really struck with me. But before we kind of get into a little bit of the nitty gritty of the conversation, just tell everybody, how do you summarize what you do now?
Yeah, so I had an online shop when we first moved to Wales. That was a project that I started, and I had it for about 2 years and then closed it.
Okay.
And that was prompted by a few behind the scenes family things happening, and my time and energy was really stretched. And anyone that runs a shop knows it you have to be, you know, on the ball. And I wasn't really on the ball with it. And during that time, I was also doing some mentoring kind of on the side, nothing formal, just really helping people to promote themselves online, to write about themselves online. And I decided to shift into offering that as my service, as what I do. And so now I'm never sure what to call myself. There's a little bit of coaching in the sense that lots of the sessions I have with people are more exploratory sessions. But it's also mentoring in the sense that often I'm showing people how to arrange their website, you know. So on my website, I think I describe myself as a creative coach, creative business coach. But actually, you know, each of those words in their own way are quite open. You know, they can mean a variety of things. So a typical way of working with me is through one-to-one sessions, where it's me and you, and we get into all the details about what you want to sell online and how you want to sell it, how you want to show up in that way.
It's very difficult, isn't it? Because I think there is a huge move towards, which from a business point of view I can completely understand, towards systematizing everything. But I remember, you know, the coach who I worked with when I was starting out, who wasn't a creative coach, or she was quite general, and she just said, I always remember her saying, you know, I can't systematize individuals. You know, everybody is unique. Everybody comes with a different set of issues, problems, challenges, dreams, desires that they want to do with. And that, for me, is the strength of doing it. And, you know, I still do some very limited number of one-to-one sessions. And without a doubt, every single time, I kind of look at my week and I think this isn't a very effective and way to use my time. But without an exception, those sessions are always really valuable. I come away absolutely fired up because you have that opportunity for real one-to-one individual reflection and response with somebody. So I think it's a really interesting that that is currently the core of what you do. Do you think that you can you see a space where you will grow this into things that could be a little bit more accessible for people on a broader level?
Yes, and in fact on Tuesday, so 2 days ago, from recording this podcast, I ran a workshop, and this workshop was very much about being more accessible. It was still a small group, but I had a guest expert in, and so that is something I'm looking to develop, because as much as it is wonderful to work one-to-one, it can be for many people, particularly right at the beginning of their businesses, it can be a massive investment, not just of money, but the emotional investment involved in sitting with somebody and sharing ideas and saying out loud, I want to make a success of this. There's something about that workshop setting, which I love, which is this kind of collective, you know, gathering of ideas, which can be really powerful. And I'm really excited actually to develop that side of the business. So, look out for that on my website. There will be a tab at some point that says workshops.
Okay, this is funny because we did have an outline. We've already gone off track. I love that, but the thing about that is, and what you've really touched on is the idea of iteration and development and growth, which I think is so important for all of us in whatever we do, you know, not staying fixed, but looking for those opportunities and seeing where things are going to develop. But also, you know, what I noticed when I very first started off doing one-to-one stuff, a lot of the things that came up for people, particularly at the beginning stages, were the same issues. They were the same things. And that's when it sort of makes sense to put those in more of a group or slightly more organized setting. And that's kind of where my membership came from. So the one-to-one then gives you more opportunity for individual nuance. So you spoke that you'd done that on Tuesday. Just as a little bit more of an introduction, what does a normal week look like for you?
Yeah, so a normal week is working closely with clients one-to-one, and so I'll before every call there's some exploratory work, and that might be jumping on a Zoom call and kind of digging into what they really need, and then actually a huge part of what I do is research and reading and keeping up with what's going on. So I work with creatives, so it's important that I kind of know, you know, about their businesses and the markets that they're in, but also retail, keeping up with what's going on. And at the moment, that's really changeable. So there's a lot to read about that. And then producing my own work, you know, and I have to say content creation and marketing my own business takes up a chunk of time.
I think it's really shifted, hasn't it? I mean, it was changing anyway, but over the last year and a half, I think our relationship with buying things online has had a dramatic push. And now as things are opening up again, there is both, it is an interesting time because there is a balance. I think in a lot of areas, there is a desire that people have gone back to being able to see things in shop, touch them, feel them, try them on, really see things in person. But a lot of that discomfort, I think, that some people might have had about buying things online before has gone, because that's all we had. So it's a massive opportunity, isn't it?
I think it is, yeah. And it's a daunting opportunity, because obviously the more people offering stuff online, the greater your competition to stand out, which, again, if you're making your own products, you know, it's such a vulnerable process to put your work online like that. I agree, though, that I think the sort of typical online customer has just become so broad in definition now. You know, my mum orders everything online, and she's pretty tech savvy in her 70s, you know. She'll kill me for saying that. She's 71. but she, so it's not the case anymore that it's just these kind of, you know, younger buyers who are scrolling on their phones late at night. It really isn't. You know, we're purposely going online to seek out all kinds of things. Will it ever be a decent substitute for feeling the textiles, or, you know, in your case, kind of getting up close to the layers of oil paint? You know, probably not. But it, like you said, for last year in particular, the year before, it's really all we had, you know. So it sort of had to grow, and it had to just people had to get on board, actually, if they wanted to keep their businesses chugging over.
It's difficult, isn't it? Because I think very often we hold on to a slight dinosaur mindset. We get used to the way we do things, and I just find it really interesting to recognise where we each own individually do that. I have a complete block around Apple Pay.
Okay.
And you know, the other day I thought, I'm going to try this, paying for a coffee with my phone. I still don't trust it. But that's just because it's kind of come in at a stage where I wasn't comfortable with it. And now I'm like, come on, get with it.
Yeah, it's so true. I remember we went out the other day and my husband just pressed his watch, you know, against the payment machine, and it felt too easy, you know, and too kind of almost a bit flippant, you know. It's like, well, what's the thought process that's going into this? You're literally touching two pieces of plastic to each other, and we've exchanged some money for something. It just feels too easy, you know. I wonder too if it's going to, you know, if there will be this gap a little bit with some who are determined to not make everything digital and online, and, you know, and they'll probably find their place for that too. There will definitely be people, you know, who want to go down that route. But for anyone, you know, I generally work with people who are quite determined to sell online, yeah, and so are willing to recognise, yeah, where they're perhaps a bit stuck in their ways, or just don't know kind of what's out there, and then we find a path that's comfortable for them, you know.
That's a good point though, about what's comfortable for you. I mean, there's a line of thought about, you know, sell as you like to buy. With Apple Pay, I have Apple Pay on my website, even though I don't use it to buy things, because I recognize that for other people, yeah, that's a route that they like to take. So it's very interesting where we come into it at one end, mm, and other people are there at the other end. What's the biggest block that you find that people have around selling? Or do you find that when people come to you, they're already over that hurdle?
No, they're not over the hurdle. Okay. I think actually it can be quite reassuring when people have been in business for a really long time and they still experience some discomfort about selling, because it's not that it's this kind of skill that everybody, you know, can acquire, really. I think one of the biggest blocks, and I've often wondered, is it cultural? Is it, you know, I haven't really decided what the root causes are, but I think one of the biggest blocks is just feeling quite bashful about it, and a bit like it's drawing attention to yourself unnecessarily. And again, that could be the kind of client that I attract. You know, I do attract people who are perhaps more introverted, you know, that's my own approach, so perhaps there's a connection there. But so a typical client who struggles with selling feels that, you know, they don't want to bore people, they don't want to repeat the same message, they don't want to draw attention to their pricing, those kinds of things. That can be a problem.
It's interesting about attracting people who are in a way similar to you, and I think that's very often how we make decisions about who we want to work with, isn't it? You've got to feel some sort of connection with somebody in order to feel like you can work with them and you trust them, because actually there's no point in me coming to you and doing work with you if you prompt me into doing something and my resistance is so strong, yeah, I'm just going to push back 100%, or I don't trust that what you say is going to help me. But that trust element and getting to know somebody element, that's key to all of it, isn't it?
It is, yeah. So it's a really important distinction, you know, that this isn't therapy, but it is a therapeutic space in some ways, you know, because you in general, we're working one-to-one. I'm knowing the numbers in your business, I'm knowing what drives you, I get to know a little bit about your support system, you know, so it is quite a sort of intimate conversation if you want it to be. And so yeah, there is a vulnerability to that, you know, but it's also partly my job to recognize, you know, and I look for things like body language cues and things like that. You know, if I kind of say, oh, how might it feel to do this? And somebody, you know, literally collapses, you know, falls off their chair, I've probably pushed it too far, you know, so I aim not to do that. So that's part of the job of a mentor or a coach or, you know, somebody that you're trusting with your business, you know, to know and understand your approach and to try and pick out of your current approach some things that are working. It's not all about what you're not doing, you know, a huge amount of it is what you are doing really well, and let's build on that, you know. So that's actually why I find it a very creative job, because you do have to dig and get into somebody's mindset, you know, and try and help them see themselves as I see them, see their potential.
It's almost like a kind of, you know, opening up of a flower or something unfurling, yeah. Isn't it? Is that we start with something very small, and I think very often we, you know, we are hesitant at the beginning, perfectly understandably, nervous, don't know what to say, don't know how to do this. There are a million steps, not going to lie, there are. But you never get to where you want to get to on that path, which firstly is going to be totally different for you than somebody else, unless you start taking those steps. But I suppose also I was thinking that this whole idea of recognizing that it's the know, like, and trust factor in terms of if you are online, if you do have something to sell, that's what people have got to feel from you. And that's the job of your website, is to show a little bit more. You've got to step out of keeping everything secret. Otherwise, no one's going to come and buy this stuff or even know it exists.
Yeah, this morning I was thinking about this, actually, how we might find it comfortable to bung an advert on Facebook Marketplace to sell our bunk beds or something. Or we might go, you know, we might go onto eBay and sort of have particular kinds of buying and selling conversations, you know, and find ourselves being quite aggressive in our negotiations. We might be really comfortable doing that, you know, but when it comes to our own canvas being on show and trying to promote it and asking somebody to part with their money so that they can have it in their home, that whole process is so much more complicated, you know. So those skills that we have in one arena just simply might not translate as comfortably into another. And then when it is your own work, it's so personal. This isn't bunk beds, this isn't my old iPhone, you know, this is my creation. It's a whole different thing.
But also really interesting to recognize that some, you know, the beliefs that we have are, yeah, you know, we can hold so strong to them, yeah, but actually that example, they're not true. Like if you have this thing, I can't negotiate, I can't sell. Yeah, yeah, you can over there.
You can. Yeah.
You can. Yeah. So all we've got to do is just nudge it into this sphere, yeah, a little bit.
Go to a boot fair and you see it happening all the time, you know. Something's for sale for 20p, will you take 10p? I mean, that's negotiation. You know, and do I feel bashful about that? No, because I'm at a boot fair. So the seller has in mind that process will occur, you know, and that is also a really interesting thing, you know. It's why we pay a chunk of change for a really expensive slice of cake in the most beautiful cafe that overlooks the most beautiful river. But we know we can make that cake for, you know, 1/20th of the cost. You know, it's the exact same principle. It's where people are encountering you and how they expect to be met by you. You know, so if you, as an artist or any kind of maker, creative, if you're selling your work online and you're somewhat bashful about it, well, actually there is an argument that sort of says you're attracting that same kind of reaction from the people that are meeting you.
Yeah, it's about that kind of vibe that you put out. But I think that also does take time to step into.
It does, yeah.
And this is something that I know that I've experienced, that I certainly felt, and that I see all the time with people I work with. And actually, starting next week, actually, we are going to put this out now. So when this goes out on Tuesday, we will just have started, but we'll only be a day in, so it won't be too late for you to join. I'm running this, I did call it a visibility challenge, but I've changed the way that I'm going to talk about it. And this is where I think words are really important, because challenge sounds confrontational, and it's not. Mm. It's designed to be gentle. Calling it, it's a more of a visibility journey, because what I recognized was that people needed help with these steps to get up, to show themselves, to be confident, to understand the reasons behind why they were doing what they were doing. So it's not a this is how you do it, here's all the tech pieces. It's very interesting that you say it's not therapy, but it is therapeutic. This is exactly when we first did this, I was like, I don't even know if this is going to have the kind of results that I need it to have for people. And it did. Everyone is just like, it's just shifted things. And that is so much part of this. I think whenever you're embarking on this, A, in the creative space anyway, because we always have our challenges with that. But then when you take it into business, entrepreneurial, selling, at whatever level you're doing it, it's a whole new round of mind monkeys. How do you get people to the stage of feeling like they need to be ready with something before they start?
Yeah, that's definitely a very personal thing, isn't it? It can depend on lots of factors too, like your support system. So for example, you know, it may be that they need to say it out loud to people in their real lives, you know, I'm going to do this, you know. Please support me. It may be as simple as that, which actually is a little bit overlooked sometimes, particularly if you're choosing to promote your work on a platform like Instagram. You genuinely might talk to some of your Insta pals about your creative practice more than you do people in your own life, you know. So that's something to explore perhaps. And I think another thing that can really help is, and I don't want to minimize this process, because it can be quite a deep process for some, but to let the imagination travel down the road of doing the thing, you know. So for example, you know, I've made these beautiful ceramic pots, but they're piling up in my studio because I don't have a shop, nobody knows they're here. Okay, so imagine, you know, let your mind travel a little bit and imagine how it might feel to set that up, to tell people about them. What's the worst kind of feelings that might show up for you? But equally, what are the best? You know, how might you feel to share these things with others and to have money in your pocket from doing it as well? So sometimes it does take imagination, which is where, you know, creators are gifted. You know, it's often someone that's had the imagination to paint or to make something, they often find that pretty easy to do.
There's a thing, isn't there, about whether you're a carrot or stick driven person. And I remember doing various tasks in this and thinking, well, this is rather ridiculous, because I think that there are different situations when we have different drivers. Sometimes we're a work towards something, sometimes we're a push away from something, and there can be a degree of discomfort that makes us you know, take that next step. And I think that with this, I love what you said about just verbalizing it. I use this tool all the time. Like, if there's something I want to do, make it public somehow. You know, you can do that by writing it down for yourself, but saying it out loud, getting other people in on the game. So if you're on that precipice, if you just say, and it, I'm going to get these ready for sale and they'll be available at the weekend and I'm going to start sharing them on Instagram. You know, that can be your first stage before you even get as far as selling it on an online shop.
Yeah, that's right. And you know, it is an interesting time to promote your work in the sense that you can, I don't recommend it, but you can rely on a platform like Instagram and have conversations in your direct messages. You know, honestly, that is a one way of doing it. You know, I don't think it's the most risk-free way of doing it, but it's one approach. And so if that's where you're at, it's so much better that you kind of nibble away at the at the problem, you know, than let it just grow and grow and grow to the point that you're feeling quite frustrated about, you know, nobody knows I'm doing this. And
yeah,
actually, I know that I know in my heart of hearts, it's actually really good. And, you know, and I'm proud of it. So there are lots of mindset type exercises to do, which I won't go into. But, you know, there sometimes as well, it's listening to the feedback from others. I think that can really help. And one thing I have recommended to people sometimes if they really struggle with this is to create a kind of evidence bank for themselves, you know, and that might be a journal, it might be post-it notes, it might be a folder on your computer, it could be in the form of a vision board, you know, just whatever you, however you choose to do that. But listening to others say, actually, I really love how you use that blue and the green together, that's really beautiful, you know. This isn't about kind of, you know, hanging on everybody's last word of praise. It's not that. But if this is something that you're struggling with, and you find it hard to actually get over those hurdles, then having this evidence bank can really help you. You can draw on it when you're feeling a bit flat.
I think it's just recognizing when there's evidence that other people value what you do, because when we're in our low patches, and they happen, we can get overwhelmed with the, what's the point? Nobody's interested. Why do I spend all my time making this stuff and all of those kind of things? And it happens. It happens to everybody. Mm-hmm. And having something to help pull you out of that, whether that is commitment or being able to go back and have a look at all of those little comments and realizing the value that what you do makes to others, that's one of the things that really helps get you out of that little bit. And I think the other thing here is that so many of us grew up with the sense that things had to be big, like shops were successful shops, successful companies, successful brands, you know, they're huge, great big things. So, well, how can I possibly compete on that front? The answer is you don't have to, right? You don't have to do it like that at all. So I always think that so much of this is about really defining what your vision is,
yes,
for what's going to be successful for you. And it's artists talk to me about making huge amounts. I say, how many paintings do you actually make in a year, right? You know, is there a way of looking at how you align what you make? Do you want to be pushed to be making 60 paintings a year? You know, so there's a very fine balance to be had, particularly with creatives, about what you make, how much of that you want to sell, the story and the steps you need to take to get that out there. But also, and maybe if you're working, I think the areas of craft, it's slightly different, but certainly for artists, accepting that there's an element of the work that you do, which might not sell. Mm-hmm. It's not necessarily there to serve everything being sold, it's there to serve your creative journey as well. And I think that's a really difficult thing for people, because they feel like they're failing if they don't sell everything they make. And for artists, certainly, that's not your whole job, actually, just to make things to sell.
Yeah, I think we live now in this time where it's like the iceberg has sort of been tipped on its head a bit, you know, and we feel like we have to share everything from our morning breakfast to our evening Netflix choices, you know, and so because of that, it's difficult actually to remember that it hasn't tipped at all. The iceberg still remains, and the vast majority of the work will go unseen. And when I work with clients, I love to ditch the idea of time and instead talk about capacity. And I think the pandemic has definitely helped people wrap their heads around this concept that it's really to do with your energy and your motivation and whether your kids are screaming for you from downstairs, you know, and all the other responsibilities you have in your life. So yes, you may on paper, you know, have 8 hours in the day. Okay, an hour of painting. Okay, fine. In reality, I mean, besides the paint needing to dry, you know, in reality, it just will never, ever work like that. So ditch that idea of time. Work instead in terms of whether you want to call it flow or your energy levels, your capacity, whatever word you want for it. Think of it more in terms of, you know, what, how can I create something that I've really enjoyed doing? And then take a really objective view of it and think, is this something that I can sell? Is there a market for this thing? Am I willing to test that market by putting it out there in the first place? You know, and those other factors can then come into play. But this idea that kind of you're a production line and everything is monetized, it's actually going to rob you very quickly of any kind of creative joy that you're hoping to have.
Is it tricky though? Because when you say, okay, so we're creating this thing, we're testing the market, we're putting it out there. And often what happens when you do that is deathly silence. Mm-hmm. Or, you know, somebody doesn't jump and snap your hand off the first time you offer something. And it's very easy at that point to retreat back into your shell and think, well, I did it, I tried it, it didn't work. And I don't know what the answer to this is. It's apart from finding this balance and where that is for you between drive in terms of what's important and also recognizing reality and where you need to protect yourself and being really clear about the kind of life it is that you want to create for you and your creative life and your business.
Yeah. It's another one of those incredibly personal things, isn't it? Because if you're spending your last penny on art supplies and you need to sell this painting to pay your rent, well, that's a whole different scenario, isn't it? To it being more of a kind of hobby or something that, you know, perhaps even you've come to in your retirement and you're maybe not reliant on that income, you know. So it's a really that there's a whole bunch of scenarios kind of between that, you know. And And it, in terms of kind of being willing to try things, I'm a bit like you. I don't know what the answer is to that. I think it is really personal. I think some things, if you're working from this place of kind of, oh, it's fine, let's just see. You might not even feel like that from day to day. Some days you'll find that whole process quite easy, and other days it will feel incredibly burdensome, you know. So I don't know. If anyone knows the answer, write in to Alice. We'd love to know.
But it is funny though how that if it is a real necessity, that often makes you do the difficult things. That often makes you try for the, it's not just once and do it, it makes you try for the second, third time. It makes you get to grips with some of the tech that you might need to get your head around, which quite frankly these days all of it is designed and invented for most people to be able to do. It feels scary at first because it's new, but you know, we're not coding computers anymore. It's click boxes, upload things. It takes time. But it's designed to be easy, but I think people still really step back from it. And often it's only when you get to that point where your drive for it, whether that is fear of being overwhelmed from an avalanche of paintings or a mountain of ceramic pots or whatever it is that's going to do your fear of like, okay, I really want to get these out there, or whether there is a financial driver. That is often what propels people into this first, inevitably slightly uncomfortable stage of selling their work online.
Yeah, it is. And that's actually where working in a group and finding, you know, whether that's a membership or kind of finding like-minded people online, they may actually be making quite different work to you. But that can be so helpful, you know, just to have somebody map out the practical steps. Actually, this is what motivated me to go into this work, because I felt like so much of the advice online was quite vague. And it's not that I'm it's not that I am a super detailed person, but I do like to understand, you know, the hows. Okay, so you're telling me to show up online. How do I do that? You know, you're telling me that I can sell my work online because everybody does it. Okay, so what are the steps involved in that? You know, so how-to guides can be terribly boring and generic, but actually there is a place for them. You know, if the tech is stopping you, or if understanding how to, you know, create a video is stopping you, it might be better for you to spend your time learning how to do those things than actually creating something at the moment. You know, yes. put a pause on the painting just for a day, yes. and yes. take a really fantastic course, high quality course, yes. Or work with a high quality mentor who can actually help you to develop these skills, and then pick the paintbrushes back up again, and, yes. and you'll feel much more motivated to share your work.
It's a much more realistic way of looking at everything as a whole as well. You know, yeah. you forget the fantasy idea of, you know, yes, you can do it if you want to. If you just want to go and paint every day, great, lovely. But you won't get the painting sold if you do that.
Yeah.
There has to be this balance. And I think with the tech, one of the things that I struggle with the tech and teaching people is that it's very often the tech is changing quite a lot all the time. The interface is changing all the time. You know, they even, you know, buttons move, things before you even get into necessarily best practice stuff with it. And I'm a big believer in sort of just in time learning. And I think we tend to overwhelm ourselves with a million things that we need to do. Do you know what? I still do this. I've just been away on a kind of business mastermind get together for 2 days. One of my biggest takeaways from that is the number of things that I'm going to shelve or not do, because your point about capacity, I've got to decide what I have the capacity for and what's most beneficial. And I think, yeah, it's really easy for us to have all these fantastic ideas, and then when it comes to the nitty-gritty of, okay, right, well, how do I do that? It's like, okay, well, now I can't possibly fit this all in. And my approach to this has always been, right, if it's an idea you want to do, have somewhere that you write it down, have a someday maybe list, put it on, but then focus on the one or two things that are going to make the most difference for you to do now in the next week or the next month. That's quite frankly, that's about as far ahead as I can think. And you can always find the answer to the how to do something if you can just get clear on what is just the next part of it. And then it layers up over time. It really, really does.
Yeah. Well, one of the big shifts for me working is because, you know, I'm an overthinker and I want to do everything and I flit around and there's so many unfinished things going on in my life, but I really love the idea of having a can-do list, which might sound a bit cheesy to some, but it's a brilliant shift for me, where it's just ditch this idea of this kind of never-ending to-do list. We lived in America and we saw firsthand this kind of very, you know, hustly culture, and again, redefine the word hustle. At some point you might have to go into fifth gear, you know, there are times that you do just have to kind of get going. But if on a day-to-day basis, you know, you're picking up your list of things to do, and it is giving you some kind of physical responses, you know, you can barely look at it and you're feeling a bit nauseous, that's the problem. You know, there's a problem there. And how I like to deal with that anyway is by having a can-do list. And it might look that I don't really do that much, you know, but what it's meant for me is that I'm not burdening myself with all these ideas and tasks and goals and things to reach for that are never going to happen in reality, you know. And
so tell us what is the can-do list. Is it an element of giving yourself a degree of choice, or the ability of choice at the beginning of the day, so I can do this or this? Or
it goes back to it, the way I interpret it is it goes back to this idea of capacity. So for example, particularly, you know, for anyone that has a cycle, you know, there may be weeks in your month where your capacity is to take on new things might feel lower because your energy is lower. You may have unexpected things come along. And so a chunk of your to-do list is now, well, you know, I literally can't do that. So for me, I use a whiteboard. I'm looking at it now. It's the ugliest thing you've ever seen. It's a tiny whiteboard. And I write in big writing, and I put two or three key things that I have to do in the day, you know. And then it may be because I'm quite driven by the tick box, you know. I grew up in a house of list makers, you know, so I quite like to see a couple of ticks on there. But if I've done what's on my can-do list and I add to it, psychologically for me, that's so much more powerful than crossing things out because I can't achieve them. Well, what I was finding at my sort of really busy patches in life is I was finding that I was just transferring from one day to the next, you know, a ton of things that I would never realistically get to, you know. The other thing that I do is I have a habit tracker, and this is a fairly recent thing for me, but I just printed off a template, and it's just, and I just write all the sort of habits, you know, from going outside to doing my stretches at 10 and 3 in the day, you know, and all these kinds of little things. And I fill in the little squares with a highlighter pen. And again, I'm a visual person. It's just a really effective way for me to kind of train my brain to think, actually, I've done that, rather than thinking I haven't and I need to do it.
It's one of the best things I think that we can do to ourselves and for ourselves is to, and I love you framing it in this capacity, is to understand what we're capable of and not overwhelming ourselves. And I think it is a completely ongoing journey, because I think if you are driven, if you do want things, you do tend to go bam, 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 here are all the ideas. But I have a kind of weekly, I have a little bit more that's digital now because things are movable and other people need to see things. But I still have a sort of weekly journal. And the idea is there is a very limited amount of space for each day. I physically can only put the two most important things that I need to do that day on that daily slot. I might have another list of things to get to, and then I just use a highlighter and I do the same. I do two at a time. And if I do two, then either I'm good, I'm done for the day, or at least I feel like, I've got those cracked. If it's an endless, great long, page long to-do list, I remember once having a complete meltout with my husband and going away and writing three full pages of A4 of everything that I felt I had to do. Wow. I call it like that's my mind dump. That's my when I feel totally overwhelmed with everything and I've just got to get it out of my head, clear my head. And you look at it and you think, well, quite clearly that is ridiculous.
I am all for brain dumps, you know, and probably you are too. I think it's a really effective way to you know, try and avoid those kind of 4 a.m. panics, you know, of, I haven't done that, you know. So how I like to do it, and I have worked with people who also like it this way, is to particularly if you're dealing with retail like I am, kind of selling stuff online, it can be really helpful to look at the year, you know, divide it into quarters. That's quite a standardy way of doing it, isn't it? But then shrink that back as well and kind of, you know, bring it all back to the kind of, when I wake up, do I know what I'm doing today, you know, to push things forward. If everything's so vague and so big and so abstract, you know, and of course there are some people that love that, they bloom in that kind of environment, but it seems like a lot of people don't. They need some kind of structure, you know, and boundaries, and that again is why I keep coming back to this word capacity, because often that's nothing to do with time, you know. If you give me a spare hour, I will waffle it away, you know, and I literally have nothing to show for it, you know, whereas my husband is the opposite, you know. Give him an hour and he'll there's just so much, you know, it's like you can just get through so much stuff. So if I were to compare myself always to his productivity, you know, I'd be feeling pretty rubbish about myself all the time. So I just try not to, and I try and bring it back to myself. It is a process, because it is to do with knowing yourself And in the blurb that you read about me, that's why I kind of say about also about your strong, your own strong values, but also this impact on others, you know, because you may have responsibilities that mean, you know, your can-do list is one thing, you know, and is it going to be frustrating to you because you want to do 20 other things? Yeah, it is, you know, but that's a process that might take some time to work through.
It's just a very grounded, realistic way of looking at it, isn't it? And I think as well, this idea of capacity, in my experience, is also elastic. You know, I have days where I feel like I waste the day, I faff around, I do things slowly. Do you know what? So what? You know, sometimes we need that. We can't all, goes back to working like machines. We can't all work like machines. There are other days, there are other times in my business where I'm like, bam, 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 bam. Yeah. You know, you can like, and sometimes, yeah, that's when you've maybe left things go a little bit too late, or something has come into the week that you didn't plan for, and then everything else has got shifted. But I think we do actually have an extraordinary ability to have that capacity, be a little bit more elastic, and to recognize when we can do it and when we don't want to do it, and when we should be doing it and when it's okay not to be. And I, you know, that if there's anything out of this, that is the advantage of doing something independently, is that you are working to a degree to your own structure and timetable. And I say to a degree because I totally hear you on the, if you've got stuff and it needs to be done and you need to be thinking about Christmas in September and blah blah blah, all of those kind of things. You can't change Christmas.
And also it comes down to knowing really, and you touched on this earlier, Alice, like knowing really what your vision is anyway, you know, if your goal is to have your work hanging in the local cafe, which is, you know, 10 steps from your house, well, then that is a completely different goal to you being represented by a gallery in London for a week, you know. They're completely different visions for your business. So so that is where the kind of exploratory work comes into it, you know, what actually are you aiming for? And then when you have that, it doesn't have to be a fully formed idea, but when you can, you know, I mentioned before about using your imagination, when you can sort of visualize what you're aiming for, then you start to insert the steps, don't you? It's a bit like when you say to people, come round for a roast dinner, you know, and it doesn't exist. You haven't cooked it yet, you know. Will it be the most amazing roast dinner ever? Well, maybe. Maybe the vision in your head is spectacular, you know, but unless you order the ingredients and turn on your oven, you know, I mean, it sounds really simple, but it's kind of the same principle, you know. It's what are you aiming for? And if you don't know the steps to get there, if you don't know how to make a roast dinner, well, how do you find out? You know, you Google it, or you ask a friend, you know, or you ask someone who's made 1,000 of them before you.
Well, you do the first step. I remember having a bit of a duh breakthrough moment. I was like, yeah, I want to paint bigger paintings. Mm. And I was like, well, then you've got to order some bigger canvases, lady. And I was, honestly, it was one of those things where I actually thought, how she, you know, I was imagining this stuff and in my head it was great, and I was like, well, it's not going to happen if you keep ordering 40 centimeter panels.
They just don't look that great put stick together, do they? It's the same for me, actually.
And then it was like, oh my god, it's quite expensive. And that's when it comes to that, right, you're on the, there's always these little precipices, too big a word, but these little like, oh right, next step thing. So What's before we wrap up, what's the one thing that you would like to leave people with, if they're either if they're thinking or if they're already embarking on this whole online shop thing? Mm-hmm. What's the one thing that you see people making as a mistake that you could help them out with, or thought that they could change around it?
It's a thought from a friend of your podcast, Seth, our friend Seth. And he has a fantastic short blog post, which I think we'll be able to link to in the show notes. And it's called Show Your Work. And I come back to this all the time. I'm not sure when it was written, actually. 2016 it was written. But his opening lines are this. It's tempting to sit in the corner and then voila, to amaze us all with your perfect answer. And the whole point of this very short blog post is this idea of working on something in public, out loud, you know, and not and not being stuck in this idea that we evolve privately, you know, we evolve publicly. So we read that article because I think that does kind of sum up my approach, which is, yeah, ship before you're ready, because you'll never be ready. You know, it may come to you because you've gone through something traumatic and you may think, you know, life is honestly a bit too short to worry about this, you know, or it might be that you're battling, for some it's even battling their schooling, you know, and where everything was kind of really painful to show your workings, you know, that really might actually be something that people still really struggle to do. But I love that article. It's very short and simple, but it's this idea that you don't have to be perfect before you show us what you can create. To create in the first place and to have the imagination to, you know, in your case, pick up a paintbrush and dab that paint and apply it to something and interpret an idea is in its own way absolutely phenomenal, you know. So it is a gift, and we'd love to see it.
I love that phrase, we evolve publicly. Mm-hmm. It's a, you know, it's a private thing, but we evolve publicly. And I think what I've taken from this conversation is how many crossovers there actually are between creative work we do and the business side of what we have to do as well. You know, they are, it's the same fears, worries are inherent to both of them.
Yes.
And the solution to both of them is kind of the same, which is find support, understand why you're doing it, get clear on what your goal is, do the first little bit, even if it feels scary, right?
Yeah, that sums it up, Alice. Yeah.
So before we finish, there are a few things. So make sure that you go to the show notes if you want to read that blog post from Seth Godin. But also, I would love you to follow Jo. So you can find her on Instagram. It is Jo_@_Firain, which is Firain. And her website is Firain.com, isn't it?
It is Firain.com. Yeah.
And Firain is the place you live?
No, we live in Crickyeth. So right. If anyone's coming to North Wales, say hi. Firain is it's a Welsh word. It should be pronounced along the lines of Bilain. When we were moving here, my husband, who had lived in Wales before, found the word online, you know, and it means, can you hear my next neighbour's washing machine? it means good and noble, lovely, beautiful, fair and fine. And it's connected to some really beautiful poetry. And frankly, I chose it for the shop that I had because I wanted to work with makers who sort of also had those characteristics. And then I kept it when I changed to this mentoring work.
It's an interesting word. I think it's interesting in terms of publicity because it's both memorable and also a little bit complicated to remember the spelling. So I'm going to say it again. It's Firain. So do go and have a look. She sends out a really lovely newsletter, which is easy, encouraging. But what she shares on Instagram is fabulous. So I'd love you to all go over and have a listen and keep in touch with Jo, because, you know, I think things are going to be growing.
Thank you, Alice.
I have a feeling that this is going to be one to watch. So thank you very much for your time today. It's been lovely having that conversation with you. And you and I now need to go and have a quick chat about Flowdesk. Goodbye, everybody else.
Thanks for having me.
We'll see you next week. Bye-bye.
Bye. I did feel like I was in that little corner, actually, on your lovely
my thinking chair.
Yeah, I love that. Yeah.
Yeah, well, it's sort of there. It's also the practicalities of you. There's the crap, you see.
Yeah, it's nice, though. It's really...
Stuff gets propped up on there, so I can do...